face. Well, good evening. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and well, this evening, for the first hour, we're hoping to have with us Constance Cumbie, who's certainly one of my favorite guests, and I hope she's yours as well. And Constance has really been writing about the New Age movement going back to about 1980, when she first became aware of the fact that there was an X factor, there was another force within our society that most people had no idea about it. And her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, which incidentally we still have a few copies of, was really an eye-opener to so many of us as we began to realize that there were literally millions of Americans who were wound up with a different type of religion. They talked about worshiping the Christ, not Jesus Christ. And they were looking for the return of a world leader who would, of course, create this wonderful new utopia. And they tied into the movements like the Masons and the Theosophists and the Rosicrucians and literally hundreds of other organizations that were looking for a new spirituality. In fact, they referred to themselves sometimes collectively as the Aquarian Conspiracy, and Marilyn Ferguson had written a book by that title. And if you look at very carefully at the logo on the dust cover of the book, it's three intertwining sixes. Six, six, six. Coincidence? No, I don't think so. Just accidental. I think they know exactly what they're doing. And well, anyway, Constance has been writing about this for many, many years now, and in recent years, she's been tracking the history and actions of a man that most people had never heard of, but Constance has. A man named Javier Solana, and of course she keeps us abreast of this man because he is one of the most powerful men in the world today, and most people have never even heard of Javier Solana, who is really in charge of the European Union and in charge of the military of the western part of the European Union. There are 10 nations in this western segment of Europe, and of course they have their own military, but most people are totally unaware of it. Well, without further ado, you really want to hear what Constance has to say rather than what I have to say. Good evening, Constance. How are you tonight?
Dr. Stan.
Well, why don't you pick up the story and bring our listeners up
today? Oh, okay. Well, say prayers on this one. I almost forgot we were on the air tonight.
Well, I'm glad because I'll tell you what, last night, my guest didn't show up this afternoon. My guest didn't show up. So I'm about all talked out, so I'm so glad.
Well, just pray that Excedrin PM doesn't kick in us very soon. It works as well as it did last night. It didn't. Okay, so we're talking about Javier Solana.
We'll talk about whatever you want to talk about, and this thing is important.
Well, let's talk about Javier Solana. Probably in this shape, I'm in the best position to talk about him. Javier Solana is currently holds the titles of head of the common. He's the office of the high representative for the common foreign and security policy for the European Union. He is also secretary general of the European Union and runs its bureaucracy. He also is secretary general of the 10-nation Western European Union, a military federation. And he has under his, is also active in the Quartet for Peace in the Middle East, and in fact has been extremely active in that process, documentably at least since 1991 and possibly sometime before that. And he came to my attention November 22, 1995, but it looks like he'd been handed a few presents much earlier that week, one being on November 16th.
You're going to have to hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. All right. Why don't you go ahead and pick the story up there?
Okay. Javier Solana chaired two coinciding European presidencies in 1995, and they have six-month rotating presidencies, and they have them on both the Western European Union, the Military Federation, the 10 permanent member Military Federation, of which the last to join was Greece, which joined in 1995, and the European Union, the 12-nation European Union, excuse me. Excuse me. Excuse me, Dr. Stanley.
That's all right. You go right ahead.
I'm glad I'm talking to a doctor. You can diagnose it for me. Okay. Okay. At any rate, on November 16th, 1995, it looks like another one of his processes had been put into place, which was consistent with actions he was to take at Barcelona 5 days after I initially discovered him. And that was the first. The November 16th, 1995, they put what is now the World Alliance of Civilizations process into place with the first International Day of Tolerance. And those resolutions were passed November 16th, 1995 by the United Nations. 4 days later, Javier Solana would sign a treaty of association between the European Union and Western European Union and the Nation of Israel. And 2 days later, Israel had a gigantic earthquake, which was bordered on the Red Sea, Gulf of Aqaba area. And 5 days after that earthquake, which was a 7.2 magnitude quake, and one which they consciously tried to say was less than its true magnitude, 5 days after that, they had what they said was a political earthquake. In the form of the Barcelona Conference, which was set to implement or to conclude the Barcelona Treaty, that Javier Solana would be exclusively in charge, and that there were three major items on the table. Number one, battle religious fundamentalism worldwide. Number two, favorable trading terms for the EU countries in the basin. And number three, get the USA out of the Mediterranean. And President Clinton was running the USA at that time, and the United States had requested participant status in this very important conference. And they were denied participant status and granted observer status only.
All right, hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment as we pull up our stations and be right back with us here. Well, we're getting a little lesson in history. Javier Solana, back in 1995, was in charge of something known as the Barcelona Process, and it was going to wrap up this Barcelona Treaty, which really was so important because it dealt with Israel, it dealt with, of course, getting the United States out of the Mediterranean, and it dealt with, what was the third point it dealt with?
The third point was get the USA out of the Mediterranean. The second was favorable trading terms for the EU, and also it was pointing towards they had an ultimate goal of establishing a free Mediterranean free trading zone in the Middle East by 2010.
All right, fine. Of course, all of these things are important towards this whole globalist dream of you're beginning to unite the world into trading blocks and then eventually to unite all of the trading blocks into one world order. This is really what it's all about.
And they've been using an approach of global governance, where they have a number of countries make similar or identical law pacts, and then they approach it that way, where they have compacts that they're all going to do identical things with their people. Javier Solana was mentored by his grandfather, who was Salvador de Madariaga, the famous Spanish writer who had been head of the disarmament section of the League of Nations.
And, of course, this whole idea of world government has been passed down from generation to generation.
And his grandfather, Grandpa seriously wanted world government, was very angry at the United States for having blocked it. And he had for a little while, had been the Spanish ambassador to the United States and then head of the League of Nations disarmament section, and then he was a professor at Oxford for a while, and then he exiled to Latin America and Mexico and Latin America during the war years, and then went back to Europe to found a youth work, starting college with, I believe it was some Lutheran minister, and they started a set of European colleges and university systems. And they basically wanted to think of themselves not as Spaniards, not as French people, but as Europeans. And his grandfather was active in that. And then, according to Solana's mother, Neves Matthews, who was deeply fascinated with what she called the Invisible College and the works and life of Sir Francis Bacon, said that his grandpa was also deeply fascinated by Emanuel Velikovsky, and as well as the whole Invisible College. He had one other aunt who was a famous history professor of Slavonic studies at the University of London.
Well, I think our listeners really need to understand the significance of Sir Francis Bacon. I mean, he lived back there in the Elizabethan era, but you know, he was really deeply involved in the occult and the Rosicrucian movement, and it sounds like really all of these people that you're describing were fascinated by the occult.
They made no bones about it. In fact, in the introduction in Neves Matthews' book, that's Solana's mother's book, on the life of Sir Francis Bacon, she confessed that her own personal spiritual teacher was Osho, the one who was better known to Americans as Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, the Indian guru who was responsible for his followers attempted to poison the water supply, and were charged with convicted of attempted murder on some of the residents.
This was up in the Oregon area.
Dallas area, in Oregon.
Right.
Oregon, in the Dallas area, Madrid. They set up Rajneesh Puram out of a little town they had taken over called Antelope, and then they attempted to take over Madras, Oregon, and bought out the medical practices and bought out the dental practice, and they had crematoriums they built crematoriums with bleacher seats. They said so they could say goodbye properly to their departed friends, but there were a lot of people who had very strong suspicions that they were building them for some of the rest of us. And of course then it was, the scandal was uncovered, there were deportations, and Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh was deported from the United States, but Solana's mother was very deeply influenced by him, as well as another New Age writer with whom she was in regular correspondence called Fritjof Capra.
And to our listeners, of course, what they were doing is they were going into salad bars, and they were poisoning all the salad bars so people would get violently ill, and I don't know if anybody died, but they were actively using biological agents to poison the food in the salad bars that the average people just coming in to eat, they had no idea, but these people were pretty far out.
They were very far out, and they got away with an awful lot. And then Rajneesh had 97 Rolls Royces at one point, and he had taken a vow of silence, but the vow of silence did not extend to the horn in his Rolls Royce, and he would go with march with his followers into town when the local churches were attempting to let out on Sunday and completely block them in and walking en masse, driving his Rolls Royce tooting and letting his followers following, going, Bhagwan, Bhagwan, Bhagwan. And it was quite a scene. And to think that somebody is running Europe whose mother's personal values were that deeply influenced, there is some reason to suspect when Rajneesh was deported from the United States, he was trying to find sanctuary. And according to his autobiography, he attempted to land in Spain because he said he had been given permission to settle in Spain. Now, it was Neves Matthew, his follower's son, who was the official spokesperson for the Spanish government at that point. So it's not hard to figure out where that may have come from. But at any point, Rajneesh was extremely bitter because he said the Spanish agent entered the plane and they stamped his passport Uruguay, a visa to make it look like he'd never been in Spain. And interestingly, this year, a couple months ago, there were some allegations that Solana's men did that to some people, and they stamped visas for a different place than they had been to make it look like they hadn't been anything, and what was an accused complicity with USA CIA prisoner of war camps. Very similar pattern to what Rajneesh charged. And my thinking is that probably Solana did, with his mother's pressure, promised to give refuge to Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh. And then when he became too controversial, too hot to handle, then changed his mind on it, decided he was inconvenient and wouldn't permit him to land or even establish a paper trail that he'd been there. And indeed, we wouldn't know he had been there except for the fact that Rajneesh, who was embittered by the tactic, reported it in his book.
All right, so Lana, really, what most people don't understand is this is probably the single most powerfully politically placed person in all of Europe. And certainly he was responsible for the bombing of Kosovo. I do remember when Bill Clinton went on television talking about announcing the American people that we were going to bomb, American planes were going to bomb Kosovo. And he said, I agree with Javier Solana's decision to bomb Kosovo.
I would agree with Javier Solana's decision to do this, and nobody ever said, who's Javier Solana? It's like it went right over everybody's head.
In other words, he is making decisions on how the American military planes and bombers were to be used.
I have done a new version of my disc. I've been working on it and perfecting it, and I found with this handy little computer I could sit in front of the computer and talk like into a recording studio and then burn it on. So I've been experimenting with that, and I discovered I could take voice clips of Solana ordering some of those bombings together with Wesley Clark giving orders, passing on the orders Solana had given him, and put the voices of both of those in my newest production of my presentation.
All right. Well, are you going to bring some of those out to
California
when you are a speaker here?
I certainly am.
All right, fine.
Mark public domain so everybody can make all the copies they want.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, at any rate, Javier Solana was given those powers, and then he achieved his treaty, and he was given sole credit for the Barcelona Treaty. And At that point, I became personally leery. That was just too close to certain prophecies about 10 kings handing him the power. And he had executed the treaty with Israel, November 22, 1995. And I was starting to get the willies on it personally.
And of course, remember, there are 10 nations still. Western Europe is a separate entity with 10, even though the European Union has many more. Would that be fair?
But this was the 10 permanent members of the Western European Union that had handed him the power, the military federation. And I think that many people who had made a thorough study of some of these things had overlooked the Western European Union and what its true significance was. And they were looking at the EU, and that they were trying to make a round peg fit into a square hole. And so I sent emails to my entire personal distribution list. You may have received one at that point, November 28, 1995, and I said of Javier Solana, watch out for this guy. And 2 days later, my phone started ringing and ringing and ringing, and people were screaming at me, turn on your television quick. And I turned on my television, and there was Javier Solana, the first time I'd seen him in the face, looked like somebody you could buy a used car from and feel really safe about it. And he had just been unanimously, from out of nowhere, been made the new head of NATO. When he had just finished a conference 2 days earlier, which had the distinct agenda of get the United States out of the Mediterranean, and I was dumbfounded. I sent an email to the White House, and I found out later that 52 members of Congress were equally dumbfounded, and they had sent a telegram to the White House, and they said, please do not back Javier Solana as the new head of NATO. They cited his pro-Castro proclivities. I cited his let's get the United States out of the Mediterranean proclivities. And about a month later, I came home, and my husband, Barry, said, you have a letter from the White House. Indeed, I did. It was a letter from President Clinton thanking me for expressing my opinions on Javier Solana. But the interesting part of that, Dr. Stan, is I have never used my home address on one single piece of email to anybody. I have always used my business address on Telegraph Road. The thank you letter came to the house.
And, of course, Constance, I'm sure they know exactly where you live. I'm sure they're watching very carefully.
I think they know how many bad shingles are on our roof.
We'll be right back in just a moment here with Constance coming. Well, Constance is on the front lines of this battle to try to get people to understand the true spiritual nature of what's going on, because behind everything political are other forces, spiritual forces. I truly believe demonic forces, but you pick up the story there.
Okay. Well, I started tracking this fellow. I was tracking him the poor man's way. I certainly didn't have observer status nor resources to hop on planes and jet set to these meetings if I could get a pass to get in once I was there. But I did have a certain proficiency on how to use the Internet. And they loved the Internet. It's cheap, easy communication. And so I just calmly pulled down all the publicly available materials that were out there and read them with understanding. And I've pulled down all their working documents and that were hanging out there. I pulled down all the press releases they were issuing, and I pulled down all the articles that were online about it, and looked at newspapers in the store, too, and the European Union paper that weekend said, Solana squares natal circle. That's an ancient occult concept of squaring circles. And so I started just watching Dr. Solana every day when I came home from my office. I would go down to the Internet, to the old soul dial-up connections, and see what was going on that particular day. And this man was moving fast, very, very fast. I found out the evening that I first discovered him that he had sent Spanish warships against Canada in March of 1995. And when Canada tried to stop the Spanish fishing vessels from overfishing their waters, and one went into Canadian waters and was taken by the Canadians into custody for that reason, Javier Solana personally, under his own name, not under the name of another, personally ordered 3 Spanish warships to go against Canada. And there was very nearly a shooting war in high sea between Spain and Canada in March of 1995. 6 months down the road, within the week that he signed the treaty with Israel, he suddenly announced that he had reached a truce with Morocco on fishing rights, and the Spanish fishermen who were fishing the Canadian waters now were free to go fish off the coast of Morocco again. And so that kind of makes Canada a little relieved. And then he holds his conference, and he's given everything that he wants, and then he's unanimously picked the new head of NATO, which was strange because Canada was one of the voting bodies. My best guess is that the United States put pressure on Canada to go along with it, because I'm thinking there could not have been that much love lost between Javier Solana and Canada at that point, although within this past year, Canada has signed treaties with the European Union for Canada to donate troops to the European Union.
Well, that's a little unusual, but then I think people have to understand that there are forces working behind the scenes that have nothing to do with politics. I believe that these people are motivated by other forces that people
well,
have
there
no
is
idea
a,
about.
There is a very, very, there is a chance that Javier Solana was groomed and mentored for this from the beginning. And I found his brother Lewis has a blog spot now. And he wrote in his blog spot that people didn't realize how important Javier Solana was, and then he had to go out and slay dragons and try to kill the moon every day.
Well, that thought would be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Constance is simply pointing out that Javier always seems to have a force behind him. He's unanimously accepted as the head NATO, and this is back in 1995, and even Canada, votes in favor of him, and yet, of course, just a few months previously, Javier had actually sent the Spanish Navy, Spanish warships, to the edge of Canadian waters to protect Spanish trawlers that were over there fishing. I mean, this was almost on the bridge of war, and yet, just a couple of months later, after this whole problem is resolved, why Canada is voting with the rest of the nations to have Javier the actual head of NATO. So there's some strange force. And then Constance mentioned that his brother has a blog spot. And what is his brother
called? Well, Javier Solana's brother's name is Luis Solana, and he's older than Javier. And he was a Spanish telephone company tycoon. I think he was the head of the whatever large telephone telecommunications company they had, and they had some global interests. His brother, Luis Solana, L-U-I-S, was the very first socialist member to join the Trilateral Commission, even ahead of Solana, of Javier Solana. And his brother is quite a staunch defender of his younger brother. And today he said he had been, was the most important Spaniard that had lived in well over 100 years. And he said that was understating the case, that he had, he couldn't even say how much power he really had.
Is Solana still a member now of the Trilateral Commission?
I believe he may be. I believe he is. He says still active. He has a regular blog spot in Spanish, and Google has an excellent translation engine. If you Google it and then highlight it, and then push the Google command to translate it, you'll get a pretty decent translation, better than some of the awkward translations I've seen that translate everything as it and it, he and it is it. And this one actually is pretty readable and understandable. It's a good translation. And he's, of course, you know, you would expect him to be loyal to his kid brother, but they're, Solana has played an extremely interesting game, and he came out of the Spanish administration of Felipe González, which was charged with corruption and illegal contract killings of members of the, one of the resistance, the Basque resistance groups. And the rest of the government went down smelling like a skunk over that, and Solana, who was one of the chief architects of that government, walks away smelling like a rose when everybody else walks away smelling like a skunk. And he seems to have come out of every scandal that way. When there were questions this year about the CIA prison camps, which it turned out really did exist, and Solana was called on the carpet and questioned about that by the European Parliament, which really had no powers. He had more power than all of them put together, but they still called him in for questioning. And he said, well, you know, I can't tell you this. I can't compel answers from these countries because I don't have the competences to do it. And a couple of people pointed out, oh, yes, you do. But he claimed that he didn't, and if he didn't walk away with that, leaving most of them convinced that he needed to have his power strengthened. And that is exactly what is happening, and that is what is significant. He has played a clever game. He tells the United States, trust me, and we trust him. He tells Canada, trust me, and they trust him. And then he tells the European Union, you should put me in power because I can stand up to the United States. I can equalize you with the United States. And indeed, that is the primary reason why they are handing Javier Solana the powers they are handing him, and France is demanding that his powers be immediately boosted. And it looks like Germany has plans of perhaps even, they've stated they may even, that they are considering giving Javier Solana their crack at the presidency that of the European Union. So he would then wear the hats of all the, he would wear all of his existing hats plus the six-month hat that he wore when he negotiated the treaty. And he already has the Western European Union. That was given to him completely in November of 1999. So he has an awful lot of power, and it doesn't look like anybody's slowing it down. And when everybody is saying, trust him, trust him, trust him, and everybody thinks he's our very good friend, there's something is wrong.
In other words, there's almost like an invisible force behind Javier Solana.
We've been calling him the invisible man, right. Not so tongue-in-cheek.
Well, I think it's fascinating, of course, as we see this one person working behind the scenes, amassing more and more and more power. And the question is he going to negotiate some sort of a treaty with Israel, do you think, before one of these days?
Well, he's already done that. That treaty is signed, sealed, and delivered. It is in place. What they are working on now is the Alliance of Civilizations and putting that machinery in place. They want the rules in place that all the countries are going to subscribe to in this global compact, and Bush has already said, count me on board.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Constance Cumby as we analyze really what's going on behind the scenes. Well, now, what is this other pact that you're talking about, Constance?
Okay, he has the Barcelona Treaty was the first treaty that was signed with they have a European neighborhood policy, which is also under Solana's remit. And the Barcelona process was the umbrella organization for that. And there were some conceded failures with it, and the 10th anniversary of it, where he had hoped to really make it very strong, was a little bit of a fizzle. Some of the countries were angry and sent second in command, but they still accomplished a great deal. And their goals were still to battle religious fundamentalism worldwide. But then they shifted to something called the Alliance of Civilizations, which was machinery actually started with the United Nations at the same time that Javier Solana was executing the original his original treaty with Israel. And the new policy that is to go into place is a 7-year treaty, and it is effective January 1st, 2007. It is up for a 3.5-year review period in 2010, and then that is also the year that Solana expects to have his combined joint remilitarization of Europe in place. And that was one of the other disturbing things I had discovered when I was looking at them that closely. And there were astute English observers sounding alarms and writing columns on them and pointing out that what was going on was very similar to the buildup of Hitler prior to World War II, where the first part of it was by stealth and then part of it was out in the open, and that they were following Jacques Fante, S-A-N-T-E-R, Fante's directed goal of dislodging the United States as a competing superpower in the 21st struggle for global resources. And Javier Solana said repeatedly, even when he was back in the NATO chairmanship and chairing the Transatlantic Council, he said repeatedly that their goal was to have European assets or NATO assets with European control of those assets, and that they would use them. And they did sign the treaties. Jamie Shea, who was the spokesperson for Solana in the 1999 NATO doings, has written some very erudite columns about it on the Internet, justifying it. And what they have done is that they have signed a treaty that if the United States does not wish to get involved in something that with where the NATO assets would be useful.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and a lot of things are happening behind the scenes. One of them, of course, has to do with NATO, which appears that they're going to try to get the United States influence out of Europe, and the European Union is going to be able to have its own military, and it's not going to be reliant upon the United States as it has in the past. And the major thrust of many of the people working over there, including Solana, is to decrease America's influence in Europe, and Europe then will become the supreme power. Is that more or less what you're speaking of?
Well, what has already been done, and the United States has gone along with this. And the United States went along with a program that they've signed a treaty to the effect that if they are not interested in participating in a NATO project, then the European Union is free to take the weaponry and use it for their version of their project, which is basically saying you can have our whole armed arsenal. And at the same time, when Solana headed NATO, he split the NATO command in half, and he split the United States part was to be headed in Norfolk, Virginia, and the European part, where the military assets were sitting, was in Brussels, Belgium. And basically, they, as Jamie Shea pointed out, and that it doesn't make any difference, the same guys, they wear the NATO uniforms, they wear the Western Europe, the European Union uniforms, it makes them deal, they consider it all part of the same deal. And it's just a little, they're the same guys drinking coffee together across the hall. There is no competition between the EU and NATO. What the EU now has that makes it dangerous, in my opinion, is possession of the NATO arsenal. And then when you consider that they are also working on an energy project, and I believe that this may be the one that President Bush has spoken of, that incredible breakthroughs are coming, and the program is called ITER, rhymes with bitter, it's spelled I-T-E-R. International Thermal Nuclear Experimental Reactor is one of the acronyms. They also call it a tokamak reactor, and it's fusion energy, and they say they're going to harness the energy of the stars and bring fire from heaven down on Earth, which is kind of startling considering some prophecies that that the Antichrist one day would do just that. And I don't know if they're wannabes, if they're emulating, if they're playing with us, but that's what they think they're going to do. And it gives me great pause when I consider that I have tracked Benjamin Krem and the New Age movement since 1981. And that was precisely one of the things that the book, The Reappearance of the Christ, said that their new Maitreya, whoever it was, would be doing. And then Share International, which is Benjamin Krem's organization, actually ran pictures of Javier Solana on their Spanish websites. And then, interestingly, they're on doing Google, or ask.com, the former AskJeeves.com searches on the Internet. And if you would search for Javier Solana, immediately the first things that would come up would be articles from Share International that did not say a word about Javier Solana, but were from the folks saying their new Christ is now here. And interestingly enough, on the same search, my name was up at the top as a related name. It was the only related name until I did a column and said Javier Solana to Canada, trust me, and at which point they added Paul Martin, who was the Prime Minister of Canada then, and Ken Jennings, probably as a joke, who was the Jeopardy prize winner who won multi-million dollars on Jeopardy. And but anyway, they're taking this very seriously, and they really, Javier Solana has said very openly in 2005, he started saying he wanted to merge all the military equipment of all of Europe under his command into one and have a, and that it was €160 billion, which was the equivalent of 200 some billion dollars, United States dollars. And it maybe compared to what we have right now, it's not that much, but when you consider the combined European Union population exceeds the United States, they have a sophisticated base, and they're moving rapidly. And they have publicly declared they intend to dislodge the United States as a competing superpower.
Yeah,
and they publicly said that they are going to use the NATO assets. It gives great pause.
Well, I think it's really very interesting, because what you're, in essence, saying is we're going to take all this military equipment paid for by the American taxpayers predominantly, and we're going to turn this over to the European army. And
there's not a doubt in my mind, Dr. Stan, that they may have some aims of, even some, as horrible as it sounds, having some aims of nuking us back to the Stone Age with our own arsenal.
Well, you know, what's really so fascinating about that is that I had an interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty before he passed away, and he told how immediately after the Second World War, there were massive amounts of armaments on Okinawa. So we gave half of those to Korea, and of course those were used during the Korean War. We gave the other half to a man, a little-known man named the fellow who was in Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh.
Ho Chi Minh.
He gave half the armaments to Ho Chi Minh, and that allowed him then, of course, to defeat the French, and eventually to use those same weapons against the United States until, of course, he could start getting weapons from the Soviet Union. So the fact that we turned this tremendous amount of military equipment over to Europe now is almost like deja vu.
It certainly is, only it's more, and it's more modern stuff this time. And what is interesting, too, is the European Union has a space program, an eye in the sky that's extremely sophisticated. In fact, if you go on Google Earth, and personally you can see the shingles on our house and my office better than almost anything else on the Internet. You can see the bad shingles on our roof. And if that's what their low-res pictures look like, I wonder what the high-resolution ones look like. But Google Earth, and when I look at it and study my neck of the woods, all the copyrights are held by Europa, which is a European Union-owned entity. And they have the entire world mapped out, and what's interesting, too, is they have geographical coordinates for everything when you pause on something. And to think that they, if they do have any hegemonic aspirations, And they certainly do know where the bodies are buried now, and they certainly do know where to strike. They have detailed maps of everything.
And, of course, we're building up our enemies, as best we can with the most sophisticated technology in the world. We're transferring our space technology to China. In fact, we're even talking about helping them as far as they're doing their space exploration. And we build up the Soviet Union. We're building up our enemies all throughout the world, and you have to ask yourself, why?
Well, I think it was my secretary who pointed out to me, she was cleaning my office when I was speaking in Oregon in July, and she said she found the old videotapes of George Bush making the first speech, George Bush the Elder, on the New World Order. That speech was delivered September 11th, 1991, or 1990, and 11 years later to the day, September 11th, 1990, or 2001, or 1990 and 2001. And you just have to wonder. It could be a big coincidence, but you just have to wonder.
Well, I think I know you wouldn't know well, no, but listeners don't know that the first use of this term, New World Order, was popularized by a woman named Alice Bailey. She was an occultist. And she talked about points of light. She talked about the New World Order. And I remember reading something by an occultist who said, shucks, I've never heard anybody other than Alice Bailey use that term other than George Herbert Walker Bush. I was such a surprise to hear him using that phrase popularized by
Alice
Bailey.
And then he was also talking about points of light.
Right.
Of course, their great invocations is from the point of light within the mind of God, but light stream forth. And that literally is a prayer to invoke the Antichrist.
Right.
One of the lines of that stanza that isn't as much peace, light, and love goes, let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. And this, whether the coming one is Solana or we should look for another, I don't know. Your guess as to who this character may be is as good as mine. But Javier Solana has been handed an amazing amount of power. It seems to be increasing, and it doesn't look like he's going away. And when I consider the aerial maps they have of us and the visits that he and the influence that he's had on some of our decision makers, for example, he came in January and he was meeting with Hillary Clinton, and which wouldn't be unusual, he would know the Clintons, but he was meeting with Chuck Hagel, who was the senator from Nebraska. And Googling him, I discovered he'd had some major awards that Solana had flown in personally to deliver in the past. And when people such as Joe Biden, Senator Biden, both sides of the political aisle, Hagel's a Republican, Biden's a Democrat, Joseph Biden was reported to say he wished he could vote for Javier Solana for President of the United States. And we're talking about a man who was on the USA's subversive list for years.
You're talking about Javier Solana was on our subversive list, and Hagel wants to vote for him?
Well, Hagel is very tightly allied with him. This is Joe.
That particular quote came from Joseph Biden.
Hagel probably would vote for him. Hagel looks almost glassy-eyed when he talks about him.
Well, of course, these people really seem to have tremendous power. They almost seem to have almost hypnotic power over people. I remember talking to a former ambassador, William H. Sullivan, ambassador to both Laos and Iran. And he was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And when he talked about David Rockefeller, he just lit up. It was almost like the idol worship. Like there was just nobody in the world like David Rockefeller. And I'm sure that Javier Solana is very, very similar to that, almost a charismatic or hypnotic personality.
He comes across as, here's how my observation of him, and I don't know how correct it is, but my observation of him is he kind of comes across as everybody's favorite professor. Everybody's favorite uncle, very non-threatening, the most comfortable pair of old shoes in your closet. If you had a sudden emergency and you had to decide who to leave your money with or your kids with, you might very well pick him. He looks very, very safe until you get into what he's saying and analyzing the powers that he's been given and analyzing some of the orders that he has given.
Well, didn't he play some part in this recent confrontation between Israel and Lebanon?
Yes, he was involved in that and went over and interjected himself in it. And their big thrust now is the alliance of civilizations, and I'm just dazed. I wonder if some of this wasn't almost staged in the cartoon crisis because of their slogan, crisis equals opportunity. It's hard to say what part was contrived and what part is opportunistic, if something happened and they took advantage of it, or if they helped fan the flames that created the crisis so they could say that everybody else had to have their freedom of speech and civil liberties stifled.
No, I
think
what's so interesting about the Israeli-Lebanon situation is that if Israel was going to do anything, they should have finished the job and taken Hezbollah out. Instead of that, they were forced to pull out, and my impression was that Javier had put pressure on Israel that you have to pull back. By pulling back, of course, he left the situation just like it was, and it was Israel's first military defeat.
Well, I mentioned this to your listeners before, but there is a New Age book called The Armageddon Script. It was the book that inspired the title of my second book, A Planned Deception. And he concluded the book by saying their script is now written, subject only to last-minute editing and stage direction. Down in the pit, the subterranean orchestra is already tuning up. Even now, the walk-on parts are waiting in the wings, ready for the curtain to rise. The time for action will have come. And the action he described was a pretty horrendous one, and one of the things he said was the new David may well have to pursue his agenda, such as a time of turmoil such as the world has never seen. And I'm looking at these things, and these crises are coming up, and Solana's power seems to be growing incrementally, and he's well aware of the fact that he's being watched by us. And he's sensitive to that, and he had given another interview, which was in the London Financial Times, and that promptly disappeared offline, too. But he said that he sometimes had to play an invisible role, and that basically the article was about Europe's good cop and bad cop, and Solana plays the good cop role. But lately he's been saying he has to sometimes play an invisible role and push others forward and let them take the credit. And that's probably what's going on with the Alliance of Civilizations, where they said that Spanish Prime Minister came up with this, and the Turkish Prime Minister. That stuff is vintage Solana. I know his style so well I could write for him.
What is this Alliance of Civilizations you're speaking of?
This is they hope to take the governments of the world and NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and other interests, and come together with a global compact that is to regulate. They are talking about even reaching down into neighborhood churches, even in the USA, and regulating these, and having a code of conduct and a set of global ethics. But its bottom line is an end to religious freedom. You're allowed to have a religion in the New World Order. You're not allowed to believe it's true, unless you're into something really far out, like believing Reverend Moon's the Antichrist. And if you want to believe in that and tell people, that's called dialogue. If you're a Christian and you want to say Jesus is the Messiah, that's called proselytizing, and that's verboten. And it's just basically a game of general semantics, but this time they want enforced guidelines, and they want governments to make treaties that will override constitutional guarantees in their individual countries for freedom of speech, and Solana has been bold enough to say that in so many words. And they are also in lockstep with some other initiatives, such as the Clinton Global Initiative. And there are them, like H.G. Wells, who was, by the way, a close friend of Solana's grandfather, wrote in his book, a book about the New World Order.
He had a book called The New World Order.
It was it's very similar to the title. And I guess I told your producer I had almost forgotten I had this radio interview to do and had taken a sleeping pill that was kicking in, so it may be interfering with the faculties.
Well, of course, H.G. Wells wrote a book. One was The Open Conspiracy.
The Open Conspiracy, Blueprints for a World Order.
Right.
Okay, and in that book, he had said words to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but he said the day will come when people will figure out what all these overlapping organizations and groups are about, and he said when that time comes, it will be too late to stop you. But he warned them that they may have to pursue the New World Order at a time of conflict and bloodshed, and that they should not shrink from same if that's what it took to put it over. In the 1920s, they thought they were going to put this thing over. They had a man named Krishnamurti, who was a contemporary of Solana's grandfather, And it was expected then that he would assume the position of the new Messiah, Maitreya, head of the New World Order. And one of his followers, Emily Lutyens, wrote a column for the Order of the Star, which was the order of the Theosophical Order pushing him. And she said people did not realize how drastic this change would be, that they would have to, they would have to bring this New World Order in, even if it meant bloodying their fingernails in the process to bring it in. And bloody their fingernails they certainly did, starting in Mexico and in the Costa Rica and in Europe. And they are no less determined now. Their plans before were not canceled. They were delayed, but now they were only postponed, but now they think they really have what it takes to put it over, and they don't have a sense of humor about being a whole lot older than they thought they would be when they put their new world
over. Hold on, Tom. We'll be right back. Well, this, I guess, has been Constance Cumbie. Constance, before we go on, let's get your blog spot out and help.
My blog spot's worldwideweb.cumbie.blogspot.com. I'm also going to be writing some interviews, some articles for News with Views, so they should watch for that. But my blog spot, www.cumbie.blogspot.com.
All right, fine. Now, do you foresee that there may be an expansion of the conflict in the Middle East at the present time?
It's looking that way. It's looking that way. And Iraq has not settled down. The thing with Iran is hot, and the conflict, it's looking like it's going to heat up before it gets cooler.
And, of course, there's a talk of a war against the Kurds. The Kurds want their independence. They want to unite as a country. They have part of Kurdistan in Syria, in Iran, Iraq, and in
Turkey. On the other hand, there is Saudi Arabia and a couple of other countries, and they're talking along the lines of this alliance of civilizations of putting something together, and that they're advocating for peace in the Middle East. So you may well have a form of peace, at least for a time, while they all look like heroes for putting this new world order over the top.
All right, well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, and I'm sure whatever happens, why Javier Solana will be playing an important part in this. And once you recognize the name and you begin to read the paper carefully, you'll see it just keeps popping up in all sorts of places where there are problems.
Right. So, and he's there, and if you see that, if you stay on the internet and just Google him, every day you'll see a whole lot of him. There's, and any given day, there's approximately 4,800,000 hits on him on any average day.
Well, of course, he is a major player in what lies ahead. Well, Constance, I want to thank you so very much for being up with us, especially after you've taken the sleep.
Right. Thank you for the opportunity.
And we're certainly looking forward to
having you as a guest. I'm looking forward to being there.
God bless.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Thank you. Good night. All right, fine. Well, our guest this evening has been Constance Cumbie, and we're glad that we were able to have her with us. And you begin to get an idea that here is a man little known to the average individual, but one of the major players who today, you know, is the head of the European Union, is the head of the Western European Military Alliance. He's the past head of NATO. And he is certainly being groomed for something very important. There's an invisible force behind him. And as we've often said, it looks like there's a cosmic script, maybe an Armageddon script. If everything is in place, you know, the orchestra is in place, the curtain is about to rise. And I really believe that it's about to rise on the final chapter of this great drama that's being played out today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course I hope that those of you out there in the listening audience enjoyed our conversation with Constance. As you know, she's going to be one of our featured speakers at our conference here in the Monterey Bay area, and we hope that you'll be able to come. We will have some 4 tape sets put together of the various things, the teachings we have from Constance through the years. We'll have her book, The Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. But they'll actually have an opportunity to have two talks by Constance and Chris Pitto, who did the award-winning DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, which gets into Francis Bacon, Sir Francis Bacon, who is a pivotal figure in American history. and most people have never even heard of him. And as Constance was saying, Javier Solana's mother had written a book about Sir Francis Bacon. All the occultists understand how significant he is, and the average American has no idea what's going on. So certainly we hope many of you out there in the listening audience will want to come to our all-day conference. That's the 29th of October. It's a Sunday. We're going to be serving lunch. We need to know how many people are coming. So if you'd like to come, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We got a great lineup of speakers, and I know from past conferences, when people come, they don't want to leave at the end of the day. Of course, we have to go home afterwards, but you'll have an opportunity to learn so much and get so much information. So, again, the number to call is 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we're trying to raise support to republish Dr. Dennis Cuddy's book. And if you'd like to get a case of Dennis Cuddy's book, the book is The Secret Records Revealed. That's Secret Records Revealed, and we're offering about the same situation that we did when we had my book printed. We offered people a case of the books, and people got those books and distributed them, and you can do the same thing with Dennis's book. It's a great book. It's one of the books I love to keep on my side, but it doesn't have a index in it, so we've added an index, and we've added an epilogue. And if you'd like to get a case of Dennis Cuddy's Secret Records Revealed, why, give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will want to go to our webpage at RadioLiberty.com. If you'd like a free copy of one of our newsletters, we'd be glad to send it to you. Certainly our August newsletter, which just went out. Our August newsletter goes into the background of who really runs America. And it is first part of a series we're going to be running on what really happened on 9-1-1. But you can't understand what happened on 9-1-1 unless you understand that somebody runs America and controls the media. And somebody controlled both of those investigations, the joint inquiry or the Joint Intelligence Committee inquiry, and then the 9-1-1 Commission. Who controlled them? How do we know they were controlled? Well, you want to read my August newsletter if you'd like a copy. We'll tell you the things that nobody else has ever told you. You're not going to get the whole story in the August newsletter, but when you get through the series, you'll have information that nobody else has. Of course, if you haven't read the little pamphlets we put together on the Foreknowledge 9-1-1, you need to get them because they give you an overview of exactly what's going on. That's the Foreknowledge 9-1-1, and believe me, there was foreknowledge. And did you know that one of the highest CIA officials admitted off the record that when the dust finally settles, the American people will realize that 9-1-1 wasn't a failure for intelligence, it was a triumph? Why would he make a statement like that? Why, because it got us into the war. They wanted to go to war with Afghanistan, but how could you possibly get the American people to go along with it? As Condoleezza Rice says, and she's quoted on page 180 of the book Without President by Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton, you know, the American people weren't ready to go to war. We had to have a catalyzing event to get the American people to support our effort to go after Al-Qaeda. And you'll find the exact quotation in my September newsletter. Understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle. And there really are evil and wicked people out there who think nothing at all of allowing millions of people to die unnecessarily. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and the views of our callers. We welcome your calls out from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please do not call unless we ask for callers. Please do not call unless we ask for callers, because we have with us our good friend Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And we're going to explain to you, or he is going to explain to you, what's going on in the world today. You know, it's the most amazing thing. The price of gasoline is dropping. Now, I don't know why. It just doesn't quite make sense. Of course, there was no reason for it to go up as it did, because this entire oil crisis is as phony as a $3 bill. So if it didn't have to go up, why is it coming down just before the election? And then, of course, we see the stock market almost at its all-time high. Isn't that wonderful? But what's behind that? If you look at the earnings of a lot of our corporations, well, some of them aren't doing too badly, but an awful lot of them aren't doing very well. Bob, why is the stock market going up so rapidly? Why is the price of gasoline falling just before the election?
Well, first of all, the market is where it is because the working group and financial markets and the Federal Reserve, which represent the elitists in and around government, are keeping the market up, and they're also bringing the market up to a level which will look good for the election. It's highly unusual that you will have a strong market going into a House election, you might call it, or
midterm election.
Pardon me?
They call it a midterm election.
Yeah, midterm election. Usually it's very bad for the market. Moderately bad to very bad. And here we have a market that, in at least the Dow, is reaching up to its former high, and whether it'll go through there remains to be seen. But the market is being manipulated, and that's not difficult to do, particularly with the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The price of gasoline, it was about a month ago that we put in the International Forecaster that we believe, because of the election, that the people who controlled the oil market, which are the major oil companies and other producers, particularly in the Middle East, and that they would bring down the price of oil from $73 to $60 a barrel. And they did that. And as a matter of fact, I think it based out at $60 a barrel, and I told people to go long because I thought oil could get back up to 68 or 9 or 70 over the next couple of months, in all likelihood after the election, but maybe before then. And the point is that they wanted to bring the price of gasoline down to $2.50 a gallon when they get it down to about 242 or something like that. So they accomplished what they wanted to do. Also, J.P. Morgan, which was selling derivatives to a hedge fund. Is that your music coming?
Yeah, that's it. You've got about 20 seconds.
I'll wait until later.
All right, fine. Well, I guess this evening, of course, is Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, and Bob's been at the financial game even longer than I've been involved in this. He got started in the late 50s, and because I didn't get started until 62, so he's a real old-timer. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman as we explain how they're manipulating everything. Bob, you go right ahead.
And so J.P. Morgan and others were selling derivatives in natural gas to hedge funds, and one in particular, Ama, had a tremendous leverage position, and J.P. Morgan, which just started trading natural gas early in the year, they got permission to do so, and as soon as they started, they took gas, natural gas down from $13.50 to about $8 or $9. And then they sold these puts, which were purchased by Emma and others. And then what they did was they drove the price down. And Emma went out of business, the announcement the other day. And they lost $6 billion.
Right. I just want to tell our producer that we will be taking callers about after the half hour. We're just not going to take them before the half hour. So please hang in there. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Okay, and so they go to the
a lot of sick people in that hedge fund. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, lost of hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars that invested in this hedge fund.
Well, we don't know what the bottom line is yet, but they had 10 invested. So they lost at least 60% of their money. And it may be higher than that.
$6 billion just went up in smoke.
Well, another hedge fund sat down this week, too, called Narragansett. In New York City. And I don't know what their losses were, but they're nothing like that. That was a $1 billion fund. And I'm guessing a $1 or $2 billion was lost. So that's 10 or 20% of the money. These hedge funds are very, very highly leveraged. And in other words, they put up $30 and control $3,000 worth of derivatives or shares or whatever they're doing.
Well, that's what happened to long-term capital here 4 or 5 years ago. That almost brought down the whole financial system when they went under.
Well, that particular incident was in 1998, and they lost $4.1 billion. And that was a staggering sum at the time. But they lost everything. And that fund, LTCM, was run by the two men who received Nobel Prizes for inventing this derivative thing to make it easy. And if they wrote the book and they can't make it work,
hold
I would
that
be very...
Right there. And I guess it's Bob Chapman. He's just talking about how we've had, within the last week to 10 days, two hedge funds go under. Certainly one lost $6 billion. Another one hasn't gone under, but it lost $1 billion. And these are simply beginning at trembles, you know. You know, like the foreshakes on a great earthquake that's going to come and rock a nation or rock a region. So we begin to see these trembles in the economic market, in the financial market. Would that be a fair estimate, Bob?
Yes. Yes, it is. And so they've got these balls in the air. Number one, they've got natural gas down. Number two, they've taken oil down. Number three, they've kept the market up. Number four, they knocked commodities down about 10%. And they knocked gold and silver down about 7% as it stands today. And that was part of the exercise, because if commodities and gold and silver are going down, everything's okay. And so the markets have been totally manipulated for this election. And the election is probably one of the most crucial in the history of the country, if not the most crucial, particularly for us. And that is why they have done what they've done. And it's not just the Republicans. It's all of the incumbents, most of whom are either paid off or they're compromised. And it's a sad state of affairs. And, you know, the American public was polled, and 42% of the people believe that the Bush administration and others were involved in bringing the price of oil down to make gasoline inexpensive for the election. And they're correct. And I'm surprised the percentage is that high. So people don't have much faith in our Congress. In fact, their rating right now is 25%, which is about as low as it gets.
Well, you know, Bob, I really honestly believe that more and more people are getting educated, listening to talk radio and on the Internet. I think, you know, we certainly don't have the vast majority of the American people now, but we're approaching certainly half the American people know something seriously wrong, and they're looking for answers, and when they can figure out on their own that the price of gasoline has been manipulated down, the stock market's been manipulated up, then they're beginning to realize they can't believe what they're being told by the media. That is a great sign. I think that's something to really be enthusiastic about.
Well, I think you're right, and your program is one of the important ones on the air, and there's a number of others, but not too many, not enough. And I think we have finally made a difference, and as the economic situation continues to deteriorate, many of those people who have listened to us will say, gee, I heard that on Dr. Stan Monteith's program, and I had this on there and that on there. And they were right, so I'm going to listen to them and listen to what they tell us we should do next. And I think we're coming to that. Now, of course, the elitists know that that's going to happen. And with the two pieces of the legislation which are passed this week, which I call the torture bill and the warrantless trading bill, they're going to be able to put anybody in the slammer for anything they want, with no charges and keep them there indefinitely. So life in you and I are going to get very dangerous.
Well, I suspect that you may be right, Bob. And I think what really frightens me most is that the Christians of this country are willing to accept torture as long as the president says it's going to keep us safe. And anybody who believes that or it has anything to do with war and terrorism has not come to understand that, you know, who is it who is financing the Al-Qaeda and Taliban forces that are coming down and attacking our troops and the NATO troops in Afghanistan? Why, it's the Pakistani ISI intelligence. And who funds them? Why, your tax dollars. We give Pakistan over $600 million a year, and they're financing the Taliban now that are attacking Afghanistan and the Al-Qaeda elements, and I suspect they're also funding the insurgents who are killing our boys in Iraq. Why would we be funding the people who are funding the people who are killing American boys? We did it in Vietnam. We financed the North Vietnamese government by funding the Soviet Union. Why shouldn't we do it here? People don't like to hear that sort of thing, but history records that the Gulf of Tonkin was as phony as a $3 bill. It didn't occur. And those of you who have never seen my interviews or read the writings of Professor Anthony Sutton on the best enemy that money could buy, better find out what happened in Vietnam, because you can't understand what's going on in Iraq. But when you do, you begin to realize, of course, how dangerous things are. There is no war on terrorism. I mean, you do not fight terrorism. Terrorism is an act. It's not a country. And, of course, as last week, we find out that everything we are doing in the Middle East has increased the hatred of America, has increased the number of people who are willing to join these terrorist groups, and we are far worse off than we were before we attacked these two Islamic countries and turned the whole Islamic world against us.
Well, I think that's the intention, and I think it's an ongoing effort. The husband and wife couple in Denmark that produced the Satanic Verses.
Satanic Verses.
Right. They produced the cartoon of Mohammed, and that was to cause race hatred. Now they've written a book saying the jihadists are going to lead all of the Muslim people in Europe to slaughter us. And that just isn't true. But that's not the point. This is what they're up to. And they're not neo-fascists. They're neoliberals. They're far to the left. But it doesn't matter what spectrum the enemy comes from, the enemy being the people who are against truth and freedom. And they're doing this again, this couple, in order, and they've just written another book, which has been released this week. They're doing this in order to create another deeper schism, a dichotomous situation between Indo-Europeans who live in Europe and the Muslims who are there.
And they're doing everything they can to get the Muslims to hate the Christians and the Christians to hate the Muslims. This whole thing's being coordinated. And what frightens me most is how many good Christians I know who say, we've got to kill them before they kill us. And that's the attitude. And they honestly believe that, and they don't understand this whole thing is being manipulated.
Well, you know, Stan, there's nobody more militant than I. And I can see through clearly what they're doing. And these people who think the way that you just spoke of are being seriously misled. These people don't want to have war with us. If we took our troops out tomorrow, if that was possible, things wouldn't return to normal, but at least we could talk to and negotiate with and work a relationship out. But the people in power have no interest in that. They don't care how many people, the indigenous population, get killed. They really don't care how many of our service people get killed, or the mercenaries who work with them, or the civilians in the employ of the United States government. I mean, you've got to remember, the same group of people and their ancestors and their groups have been doing this for 1,000 years. It's just that they've never been successful in pulling off world government, world control, and they're after that. And that's why they're destroying things, and that's why they're setting up their bases in the Middle East. In fact, there's a bill in the House right now which would forbid the building of permanent bases in Iraq. And I was really floored when I saw the bill. And it's in tomorrow's issue of the International Forecaster.
I bet that bill never gets onto the floor of the House.
Well, I don't know. First of all, it's not going to be discussed until after the election, because I think the members of Congress leave today, if I'm not mistaken, to go and campaign. And I'm sure that many, many of them who voted for torture and wireless and warrantless wiretapping are going to find that they're going to say, hello, Mrs. Jones, I hope you're going to vote for me. And she's going to say to them, you voted for torture and wiretapping, and I'm not going to vote for you. And you were for illegal immigration, and so on and so forth.
Well, I just hope about three-quarters of the Congress gets voted out. We get different people in there. At least they won't already be bought and paid for. It'll take a while before they can all be purchased. So I think the best thing we could do is retire most of the people in the House of Representatives and all the senators running for re-election as well.
Well, I've been pounding on that theme for months. It doesn't matter what party they're in. It doesn't matter who's replacing him. It can be the local dog catcher. It's extremely important that we get them out, because they're all bought and paid for or compromised, with the exception of a handful. And I mean a small handful. And so if they voted against anything that you think is incorrect, you want them out of there. But my feeling is get them all out. I figure it takes about a year to a year and a half for the new congressmen and new senators to get purchased or compromised. And we saw one person get compromised today, a representative from Florida, Foley, who's the head of the House Caucus Committee on Child Protection.
He actually resigned, didn't he?
Child protection, whatever it is. I saw the tape.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go ahead, Bob. You were just saying this.
I saw the tapes, but they weren't tapes. I saw the emails that this Mr. Foley sent to children in their teens of a homosexual nature. And here this guy, he's supposed to be protecting these kids, and here he's not. He's doing just the opposite. And this is the same man that was involved in the theft of the 2000 election in Florida. And he's the one who hired the computer programs to infiltrate the voting machines and rig the election.
You mean the one that, of course, got George Bush elected the first time around in Florida, right?
Exactly.
Well, so, we got a lot of corruption.
I mean, if you wouldn't want to hear what I know on this station about who's doing what to whom in Congress, it is awful.
But, of course, Bob, this represents the progressive moral breakdown of our society. And when you take God out of your schools, when you take prayer out of your schools, when you take take any thought of God creating the heaven and the earth and replace it with evolution, there's an organized effort to destroy the moral foundation of this country, and they've accomplished it, and our Christian churches are going right along with it. Literally, none of our ministers, or probably a very, very small percent of them, have the courage to say to the people in the pews, get your children out of the government schools. If you love them, get them out. Bring them up in the way of the Lord. Don't leave them in the government schools, or their morals and their minds will be corrupted. And they just won't say that, because they don't want to be controversial.
Well, they're afraid of government. I had a nice letter from another columnist today, and she said nice things about myself. And I said to her, there's a lot of people, there's a handful of people who are trying to do what we're doing. So I'm one of the few people who goes to the very edge, and we need more people to do that. We better push the government, because it won't be long before they're coming after us.
I'm sure
they have the legislation now, and they can do anything they want.
Well, that's
in fact, you know, this is very similar to what went on in 1933 in Germany, and it gave Hitler total control of the country, and it was the precursor to dictatorship. And, of course, that was all financed by the same people whose families are running what's going on in Washington today.
Yeah, speaking of the fact that the Prescott Bush worked very closely with the Nazis. In fact, I believe he was even indicted, or his firm was indicted, for trading with the Nazis during the Second World War.
Yeah, and after the war, they gave his firm, Union Securities, back to him, and he walked away with hundreds of millions of dollars. There was so much corruption, so much evil going on, and nobody knew it. People didn't understand, and the educational process in general is nowhere near what it is today. I mean, just think back in the 30s, very few people went to university. Very few people went to college.
Yeah, but the trouble is, a lot of the people who go to college today aren't getting an education, they're getting an indoctrination. I know that's what happened to me when I went to college. I was never told the truth about so many things, just indoctrinated. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, Bob, let's get on to the subject of what's happening financially. Certainly, they've certainly knocked down gold. They've knocked down silver significantly. Silver is down from almost 15 down to, 11.30, I think, today. Gold got up to about 6.09 this morning, was down to 5.90 or 5.95. I don't know. How did it end today? Do you recall?
Well, and it just the spot market was a shade. It was 5.99.60 or something like that.
What do you anticipate?
I'll get it ready for tomorrow's issue, but it's all in the computer room, you know.
All right, fine. Well, do you think that they're going to be able to hold the price of gold down? Do you think it's going to go up, or do you think it may even fall again?
It could go back and test its recent low. You got to remember they're leaning on it, and it broke out the day before yesterday. And especially in December month get up to 609. And they want to keep it undercover, so to speak, or with a lid on it until the election. So they might try to knock it back down, but I don't know whether they will or not, because they see the commercials. These are the guys who are supposed to know everything. They're market makers, professional traders, and they run the markets. And I see them covering all their shorts. I see Goldman Sachs and Citigroup and J.P. Morgan covering their shorts. I follow all the markets. And that could only, on a fundamental basis, lead me to believe that the smart money is taking profits and they're going long. Now, unless they change their mind and reshort again, I would say that we probably have a bottom in here. And today's correction downward is just one day. It's an aberration. The aftermarket in the access market of gold after the close today, it was off 60 or 80 cents and 20 cents. It was going back and forth, but that's an extraordinarily thin market. And if you want to influence it, it's easy to do so.
Well, now, so, somebody had said that the Chinese were going to let their currency float. Is that accurate? Have they actually going to let their currency float? Because if it floats, it'll float upwards and become more valuable, which means the cost of goods we bring in here from communist China, and it is communist China, of course, that we're helping to subsidize, that the cost of those goods will go up and be highly inflationary.
Well, the answer is not in your wildest dreams. I believe China, like Japan, has made a deal with the U.S. government. And the deal is, we absorb your paper, or your dollars, and we buy your paper, which is treasury bills and agency notes. And for that, you give us unlimited access to your markets. And I think that's the deal that they've cut. And they know that they're going to lose 35 to 50% of the value of the U.S. currency that they're holding. But it's a cost of doing business to them. And if you look at it correctly, from a case point of view, you can see that this has to be the answer as to why it has been done. They have $327 billion worth of U.S. treasuries. And then there's other securities besides that. And the Japanese are holding about $800 billion. And the foreign exchange balance for China should cross $1 trillion shortly. And they keep on saying, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And we're going to let the currency appreciate. If the currency appreciates, what's going to happen, as you just said, is that the goods going to the United States will go up in cost, and that means that it's going to fuel inflation, called price inflation. Wage inflation is happening at the same time, which usually together create hyperinflation. So they're going to keep the yuan, renminbi, whichever word you want to use, generally in the position where it's at. And I think a deal's been made. And I think China probably figured, gee, that's a small price to pay for us to get our economy off of its back and to make things work. And, of course, the people and the elitists, they don't care who they deal with. Whatever it takes to get our goal, that's what we're going to do, or that's whom we're going to work with. And so it's hard for the average person to understand this, because they can't understand the criminal mind. They can't understand how people can be diabolical. They're decent people with decent minds, and it's impossible for them.
Oh, I hope all that's all right there, Bob. I want to say, if you're out there listening out east, you'd like to talk to Bob, I number 1-888-24 Liberty. Well, Dr. Stan, Bob was just saying that it's so difficult for the average individual who has a decent mind and is a decent person to believe that there could be people out there who are really evil, who are really plotting against the survival of our society. And these are not only simply people over in China or in other countries. These are people right here in America whose loyalty is not to the United States, but to this globalist dream and their desire to create a world government under their control. And they think that they're going to be able to manipulate all of these people, whether it be China or India or Europe or South America or Mexico or Canada. They're planning on manipulating everything through their vast financial holdings because they control the wealth of the world through the central banks of the world. But what happens if they're wrong? And I really believe they are. I want to believe that one day is going to come a day of reckoning. What are your thoughts on that, Bob?
Well, I think there is, and I think the outcome this time is going to be terrible because they're going for the whole deal. They're going for world government, and they know what the outcome is going to be if they miss. And they know, because they planned it, that there's going to be a depression. There's going to be heartache throughout the entire world. And they know that's going to bring upon the world social dislocation, better known as people walking the streets looking for food, no jobs, no house. And it could get very, very, very nasty. And in a situation like that, if they think they're going to be able to hide out, they're mistaken. Because there's too many people today who know who they are and what they're doing. And if the world's going to go down in flames, so to speak, I can promise you they're going with it.
You're talking now about the elite of the people in these covert organizations who are manipulating the economy of the world, who are manipulating our banks, who are manipulating our media, what we refer to as the invisible government. Is that who you're referring to?
Yes, correct.
All right. Well, I think that we're living in very uncertain times, and then superimposed upon the economic woes and financial and moral woes of our society would appear to be the almost insane desire to expand the war in the Middle East, which has actually turned so many people against America. In fact, Karen Hughes, who works in the Bush White House for many years on public relations, says it will take decades before we can undo the harm that has been done, as people throughout the world are turning against America and hating America because of what we're doing in the Middle East today. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you'd like to talk to Bob about what's happening financially, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, 464-8295 here certainly in the Monterey Bay area. Now, Bob, you know, as far as what people should be doing now, what should the average person be doing to protect themselves? So they're, you know, I understand the Crystalex stock you'd recommended many years ago, that's really done very, very well. It went from about 1 to 6, and what's it doing now?
Well, it's selling around $3 or so, and they're still waiting for approval from the Venezuelan government to be able to mine the property that they've been working on for so long. Actually, it closed to 285 today, and I think that will happen. If you remember way back at the beginning when we first began, I don't know, it must be 7 or 8 years ago, I kept on telling people to get out of debt. And during that period of time, a lot of people have, because a lot of people have emailed me or told me when I've talked to them on the phone that they've done that, and many of them have sold their homes. Some of them were a little premature, but that's okay. They made a lot of money, and now we see what's probably in store for the real estate industry. And so the best thing for people to do is to get rid of your credit card debt and your revolving debt. Those are the most important of all because they're the highest interest rates. And then get rid of the debt on your vehicles and and hope that both of you keep your job, which would be a real difficult thing in the next 4 or 5 years, so that you can keep your home. But if you have no extraneous debt and just have your mortgage, maybe you'll be able to keep your house. And I think that's the most important thing. The second thing would be getting involved in gold and silver coins, followed by gold and silver shares, and for the very wealthy who have lots and lots of money, I would consider treasury paper denominated in either Swiss francs or Canadian dollars. And there are special situations out there. Oil and gas stocks and trusts are good. I don't believe the price of oil will go below $60. And if for no other reason, then a good part of the money that is going to the Middle East nations comes back to the United States via London in the purchase of treasuries and agencies. That's part of the deal that they made with the U.S. government. We'll protect you if you do this, 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 and this. One of the things is buying U.S. treasuries with the money that they're making that would they would not normally make in oil and gas. And so it's not in any of their best interest to see oil below $60. It could go to $50, but I don't think so, because the U.S. needs the money coming in to recycle their debt every day. The last figure I had was $3.4 billion a day in investment, and that figure gets higher and higher every day.
This is the amount of money that we have to borrow every day just to meet our bills as a government?
Correct.
Now, $3.4 billion a day, that's, I can remember when it was only $2 billion a day we were having to borrow. How long can you continue doing that? Because you're talking over $1 trillion a year.
Well, I think they're going to continue to do it. I'm already seeing projections for next year of $820 billion current account deficit, up from about $700 billion this year, round figures. And that's what they call imbalance or unbalance. And they don't seem to care, because they believe if they continue inflating, they'll be able to keep the system going. They don't dare allow deflation voluntarily. And the reason why is you can't control it. They can't. Nobody can.
All right, well, let's go to John, who's calling us from Palm Springs. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But mark what Bob said. We're borrowing $3.4 billion a day just to pay our government debts. We're having to borrow this from other countries. And remember, that's well over $1 trillion a year we're having to borrow. But they're not telling the American people that. John, did you have a question or comment?
Yeah, well, this might be a little bit out of the way, but I'm wondering, with the current situation, the climate of absolute corruption and dishonesty and the neocon financial agenda, or whatever you want to call it, do you think that people are tending to think a little bit more in terms of dishonesty, like... let's just take the money and run while there's time, and that type of attitude.
All right, you think that, Chris, what's going on then, Bob, is really breeding sort of a feeling, well, why don't we just see if we can steal the money or just not pay our taxes or just try to get around the system? And what would you say about that?
Well, I think some people are doing that, but it's pretty difficult to do, because the system is so invasive. It's very, very difficult to beat the government. You know, they have the ability to monitor everything that you do. They have voluminous files on everybody. And, hello?
Yeah, go right ahead.
And, some people do leave the country. and they can avoid it to a certain extent. Some of them perhaps fully, but not everybody is willing or equipped to leave the country. But I do think people realize that corporate government Wall Street banking insurance company corruption is beyond anything that they've ever heard of. And that is true. And they realize that they just don't know what to do. And that's why we have to get them to listen to programs like this so that they can do something to help themselves.
And I think that, of course, tragically, when you have corruption at the highest levels of a government, people tend to want to compromise themselves, justifying, well, they're doing this in government. Look at so many of these congressmen. You know they're getting payoffs one way or another. And if they don't get a payoff when they're in office, why, of course, they get fancy jobs. They become lobbyists when they leave and get big salaries lobbying their former friends. But, ladies and gentlemen, because the system is corrupt, we cannot become corrupt because, of course, we dishonor our Lord, number one, and secondly, because, of course, we would destroy ourselves when we become corrupt. So we cannot do what the others do. We have to do what's right, and we're told in the scriptures that, you know, we are to certainly obey the magistrate. God has put these people there. I believe that they're corrupt, but I believe we should pay our taxes. Whether I like it or not, I think we should. And we'll sleep a lot better, and not only that, it's the right thing to do. And because you live in a corrupt society doesn't mean that you have to become corrupt. Would you agree or disagree with that, Bob?
Well, I agree with you completely. I mean, you become ineffective unless you're really, really smart. And most people aren't that smart. They might think they are, but they're not.
And so our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Bob, what sort of coins should people be buying? What about silver? Should they be buying gold or silver? And should they be heavy? And which one should they be invested in? And what's the most efficient way to do it?
Well, what's good for you is not good for me. Every case has to be taken individually. And people should be investing in what's suitable for them. And the first thing is gold and silver coins. In gold coins, I like numismatic coins because I think they'll appreciate the best, the most. I like silver bags, 90% silver, because there's less premium. And I'm not involved in that. I have people go to a coin dealer, and they know more about that than I do, so they help them make decisions. I also recommend shares and shorting the market and going long and short oil and everything else, because for 28 years I was a stockbroker, and I own my own firm, so I obviously know something about the stock market. And through that venue, we've been very, very successful in helping people make money.
Well, I know that you were telling people to begin shorting these major corporations that were involved in home building, and I guess those shorts have done pretty well, haven't they?
Well, they're up 45-50%. And shorting is when you bet a stock's going to go down. 99% of the people bet it's going to go up, and but we do both. And they're down 45-50%, but they haven't even started yet. It's going to get much worse. I expect that 50% of home building will cease, and the fallout from that will be about 1.8 million lost jobs, both in construction, real estate, mortgage, and all of the industries that support them, and all the people that support them. It's just like, in the Army, for every guy that's on the front line, there's four guys behind them doing this, that, and the other thing. And so I expect that that's going to be a very difficult situation. But I think gold and silver are the safest places to be. I think there's going to be lots of inflation. And I think people should own gold and silver coins and shares. And I think it's the only way that I know of that can protect themselves.
All right, let's go to Adam, who's calling in from Soquel, California. Hi, Adam. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Do you have a question or comment?
I have a question regarding the coming crisis you guys are talking about.
You're talking about the financial crisis?
Financial crisis,
okay,
yeah.
Fine.
Okay, so suppose all this stuff happens, and suppose someone's in a position where they could actually leave the country. Would that be a wise option to do? Because here in America, we're so in debt, and we keep on borrowing from other countries. Would that be a wise thing to do, or would that be kind of out of the question?
Well, first of all, you got to be cut out for it. And it all depends on your age and your financial responsibilities. Almost every country in the world won't let you go there and work. Some will, but you got to get work permits and things like that. And for the most part, they don't want you to work in their country. Good example I saw the other day in Switzerland. 20% of the people who live in the country are not Swiss. And a lot of them are on welfare. They're people who have gone there because if they stay in the country where they lived before, they might be killed. And, of course, people use that as a ruse, too. But the point is that if they shut them off welfare and they can't get a work permit, they don't eat. And that makes them go away. It's the same concept in America where if corporations are forced to stop hiring illegal aliens, then what's going to happen is they're going to go home. And incidentally, there was a case yesterday that was in the appeals court. The Supreme Court sent it back down to the Court of Appeals. And it allows the injured parties, companies, and people who were financially injured by Mohawk Mills, which employs thousands of people because they made a specialty of hiring illegal aliens. Now, these people who are injured financially can, through class action or otherwise, sue not only the company under RICO, but all the people who got those illegal jobs. And once the American business sees this, they're going to stop it. And so a lot of people are going to be without jobs, are going to be leaving.
So as far as
other countries are concerned, if you do go and you still have to work, then you'll have to be self-employed, and you'll have to have capital, and you'll have to have a craft of some kind.
All right, what do you think about that? If you can be self-employed in another country, Bob, how would that be? Would you suggest that?
Well, you could open up a restaurant or you could build houses.
Let's say they have a craft of some sort. He can actually work. He can make a living there simply because of his skills. Would that be good? What he really wants to know is should he leave the country with the way things are going? If he can survive.
Generally, the answer is yes. But there's a lot of qualifications. You got to learn another language. Go to Canada,
for example,
sure they speak English.
Yeah.
Well, what were you thinking of, Adam?
Well, I'm investigating Australia, and it's a low population continent, and I don't know what the financial world is like over there. It seems fairly stable. I don't know what their debt ratio is compared to America, but I know it can't be as bad as what the situation we're in here.
All right. What about New Zealand or Australia, where you wouldn't have a language problem?
Well, I think both of them have financial problems that you're not aware of. We write about them in the International Forecaster every week. They've had a housing boom, and the prices are starting to come down. And New Zealand is the one that's got hit first. Their currency was at 74 to a dollar, dropped to 70, and now it's down around 66. And that's a reflection of the value and what's going on, employment and so on. And they export to live there. and that can get worse as time goes on. Both countries are nice places to live. In Australia, it's difficult to get citizenship. They make it very hard for you. New Zealand's not as bad. Canada's difficult to get landed immigrant status there. If you're a person of color, you don't have a problem. If you're an Indo-European, they really don't want you. And that's just a fact. And so, you know, what are you left with? You could go to Australia and New Zealand, but if you're willing to learn Spanish, you could go to Chile, Uruguay, Argentina, Mexico. They all have decent economies.
We're going to have to let you go, Adam, but I want you to know that you're going to have to make that decision. It's a tough one, but the battle for survival is here.
All right, fine.
Well, let's go to Rick, who's calling us from Texas. Hi, Rick. Did you have a question for our guest this evening?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Stan and Bob Chapman. I wanted to know, he said that they were going to reinstitute tariffs because of what they've done to the economy. They've kind of gone too far on the globalism to help ignite the economy. I was wondering if he had any timetable on that, because I haven't really heard anything about it. Of course, the press wouldn't say anything about it.
Of course, so the thing is, I think Bob thinks that they should reinstitute tariffs, and so do I, but I don't know that they're going to. Bob, do you have any word that the globalists would allow them to reinstitute tariffs to protect our corporations and our industry?
Well, first of all, not with the group that's in Congress. Now, it's unbeknownst to you, but yesterday, Schumer and Graham, who had the bill in the Senate on the floor, ready to go to the floor, on 27.5% tariffs on China.
All right.
Pulled the bill.
In other words, somebody twisted his arm
from the very beginning.
All right. Pressure was put on because certainly the globalists do not want any sort of tariffs. They certainly don't want to protect our industries. Is that correct, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically, I don't think that the right now, I don't think there's much of a chance of it, Rick. I would love to see it, but of course, it's not going to happen until we have responsible people in the House and the Senate.
Okay. All right.
God bless. And let's see, Bob, we have one question here, and that is, of course, what about bullion? What percentage of our wealth should you keep in bullion at the present time?
Well, I think at least a third to a half of your assets should be in gold and silver coin and bullion. And again, I prefer the numismatic coins and the 90% silver bags. Bullion, if purchased, I would buy American Eagles or something like that. And a smaller percentage. Because I believe if gold's going to go substantially higher, the big money's going to be made in the numismatics. And when you get to the top, wherever that may be, and you know enough to get out because you're taking the international forecaster, then you can switch to bullion coins to take whatever ride there is down.
All right, fine. Well, Bob, I want to thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and we'll look forward to talking to you next month.
Well, it's always a lot of fun to be on your program.
God bless, Bob.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, Bob, how can people get hold of... hold on. Bob, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get hold of the International Forecaster. That's so important.
Well,
go ahead.
That's pretty simple. We have a toll-free number, and that is 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188. And if you'd like to go to our site on the internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. theinternationalforecaster.com.
God bless. Thanks so very much, Bob. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Bob Chapman. And, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is still primarily listener-supported. And those of you out there, we hope many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that simply by calling 1-800-544-8927. When you do, of course, you get our four best tapes or CDs of the month and our monthly newsletter. Then, of course, we want to remind you we're going to be having an all-day seminar. That's the 29th of October. Constance Cumby, Chris Pinto, and a great lineup of speakers will be here all day on the 29th of October. And, of course, you have to call ahead of time. We have to know how many people are there. We're saving lunch. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you're coming from outside the area, let us know. We'll get you a list of the motels and get you a map so you'll know where to go. And then, of course, we do hope to republish Dennis Kennedy's book, The Secret Records Revealed, and we've added an index to it. We've added an epilogue. So if you're interested, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you'll get a full case of Dr. Kennedy's book in the same situation that you got the full cases of my book, A Brotherhood of Darkness. And then, of course, we hope many of you will try to understand what is going on in the world. You'll get our material on the occult hierarchy, on the supernatural, the videos on they sold their souls for rock and roll. You'll get the book by Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil, and actually it's a, and you can get that with or without the four tape set, interviews with Malachi Martin, where he tells you about the satanic ceremony that was held in the basement of the Vatican. These forces are every place. We encounter them every day. We have a book, The Diary of a Devil Hunter, a man who was deeply involved in Satanism, and, of course, was able to get out and try to let people know what's going on. We have a Satanism and Deliverance, a four-tape set. We have so much material available from Radio Liberty that will explain to you what is really going on in the world today. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Go to our webpage and you can see all the things that we have that you're not going to be able to get elsewhere. I mean, how was it that Adolf Hitler was able to do what he did? Well, you need the book Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, going into how American corporations funded Adolf Hitler both before and during the Second World War, when American boys were dying on the beaches of Normandy. And then, of course, who funded the communists? How were they able to survive? Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. American corporations and American financiers and American banks financed the Bolsheviks, just as we're financing the communists in China today. We have to have an enemy. And if it's not communism, let's make it terrorism. Who funded this whole Al-Qaeda movement from its very inception? Well, a recent article by Arnold de Borgrave, we'll be glad to get you a copy if you'd like to see it, talks about how the FBI and the CIA funded the ISI, Pakistani intelligence, that funded Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And so it's like deja vu all over again. Understand what's going on. Help us get the word out. The telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Remember, we carry health products, food products, and the Berkey water fillers, and they do help to subsidize what we do, but we're still primarily dependent upon those of you who believe in what we're doing and want to join us in this epic struggle for the souls of men. Thank you.
good afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of God's creation, it is. Take a deep breath. It's here. It's Friday, the 29th of September, 2006. Well, more and more Americans are getting outraged and starting to show up in the polls. As they say, figures never lie, but liars do the figures. And despite their efforts,